Lifeway Christian Resources. Good to see everybody today, and I want us to follow up a little bit on what we talked about at chapel this morning, but let me just give you a brief verbal review in case you might have missed that. We talked this morning about the story of Jonathan in the Old Testament, 1 Samuel chapter 14. We talked about characteristics of effective leaders. First, we said that effective leaders are able to recognize priorities. And we said effective leaders understand reality. And we said effective leaders develop plans, and they make decisions, and they motivate others. So those are kind of the five things we're going to use for our framework today and tomorrow in our time from 2:30 to 3:30. I realize that some of you have classes that start at 3. I realize that some of you can be here today, not tomorrow. That's perfectly all right. If you're not able to be here tomorrow, take a look at these handouts, especially the ones on this end. Also, since I know that some of you are leaving at 3, let me say that what I have displayed here are some resources that our department produces. Not by any means all of them, but in fact, since I know some of you are leaving 3, let me go ahead and tell you briefly about these, and that's all I'll say about them. Let's Worship is a quarterly magazine that has over 100 worship ideas. Everything from a children's bulletin to drama. Sometimes there's a banner pattern. Almost always there's a dactylology or a sign language rendition of a hymn that you can use to enhance worship experiences. Stuff like that. It's all about worship ideas. And it comes out every quarter. We're real proud of Let's Worship. Proclaim is, one more thing about Let's Worship. It also has a Wednesday night Bible study type thing that comes with a teaching outline for you on one side and an interactive listening guide ready to reproduce on the other side. And you have permission to reprint everything in here except some of the music that, who knows why, musicians are here. So. Proclaim is a preaching journal. If you haven't seen it in the last year, take a look. It's new, it's fresh, it's doing really well. Growing Churches is a magazine that tells the stories of some growing churches. Some of these, like this Steve Stroop interview, some of this is some pretty contemporary stuff. You might enjoy seeing it. It's not always contemporary, but in this particular issue, it happens to be that way. We have newsletters, such as Reckon Sports Newsletter. That's a monthly, all about church recreation stuff. This is FYI, which is a very helpful, you may think this is not important, but very helpful piece for church secretaries, Secretary FYI. Here is a youth ministry update. This is probably the most scholarly of all our pieces. They do surveys, and like I remember recently they had one on the transition that girls make in sixth grade. Well, that's this one, how girls view their bodies, impact on their spiritual health. Very significant stuff, very in-depth resource. And there's another one I apparently didn't bring called Caregiving, which is about the caring part of ministry. We also have some pamphlets about different kinds of ministry that folks might be called to. And the books, I'll be talking about these two days. Toolbox for Busy Pastors is one that I wrote. It has 100 two-page articles, nothing over 2 pages on how to do stuff, mostly for pastors, but it crosses over quite a bit, especially to missions folks. The missions folks would really benefit from Toolbox. I'm teasing. Somebody suggested this morning I talked a lot about preachers and not much about missions, and they're right. Building Blocks for Longer Life in Ministry. This is about your health as a minister. We have a guy on our staff at Lifeway who has a PhD in wellness, and since he's so smart, he figured something out. If you die, you can't serve God anymore. So it's a really high-level thing. We realize that it's a real deep concept, but the cookies are a part of that. You know, it's important. We'd appreciate it if you drink some water after class. Building Blocks for Longer Life Ministry. Honoring the Ministry is a Bible study on the biblical concept of honor. Every deacon ought to read this book, seriously. But it's a Bible study on the biblical concept of honor. So I'm sorry for that commercial, but just want to give you an overview. I want you to think about leadership and about those five areas that we talked about today. And before we jump into the five areas, think in terms of leadership as a lifelong pilgrimage. And I have a fancy PowerPoint to show this, but we're not set up for that today, so I've made some scribbles on the board just to help you realize and remember what we're talking about. And I don't know if I've combined some stacks or what. Okay, here's one. I knew there were five stacks when we started. Distribute those, please. Think of leadership as a pilgrimage, and it has a beginning and it has a conclusion. When we first drew the leadership path, we call it, we started in the lower left-hand corner with God's call to ministry, and we ended up in the right-hand corner with a straight shot, which this pretty much is, but when we draw it nowadays and do artwork on it, it's really a curvy path, because we realize that leadership as a pilgrimage, a lifelong pilgrimage, is not something that begins when you're called of the Lord and then goes off in the sunset and ends without ever doubling back. It always doubles back. For example, you'll notice that beginning and assimilating are the first two steps on the leadership path. All throughout my ministry, I was a pastor for 20 years and have been at Lifeway for 7. All throughout my ministry, I have been doubling back to this thing of being a beginner, again, in many different ways. It happens when you begin a new ministry at a different place of service. It also happens when you come into you wake up one day and you're at the same place, and many of the same people are there, but the world has changed around you. So over and over and over again, we find ourselves in a place where we begin again. So that's why we attempt, and my artwork is very poor, but to picture the path as something that has curved backs that come back. It's not a straight shot. Now, with that brief definition, let me talk to you about these 6 steps on the leadership path, and then I want you to identify your place in your lifelong leadership pilgrimage. Beginning and assimilating is a time in your life, your leadership pilgrimage, when you're taking in information. Those of you who are students here at Southeastern, clearly there's a way in which you can see yourself as beginning and assimilating as a leader. You're gathering information, you're pulling in some stuff. But I think you might see yourself in some other places as well, so please try to look beyond just beginning assimilating and see yourself in some other places. The next two levels are building and achieving. It is the most difficult thing in leading a conference like this is getting people to see themselves as building and achieving leaders without them thinking that they're making some kind of a private statement. Let me give you an illustration of what a building and achieving leader is. Building and achieving leader is someone who is building something that God would have them build, or they're achieving something that God would have them achieve. So, in your ministry, and you have a ministry right now, whatever you're doing for the Lord right now is your ministry. In your ministry, you're building something. You're achieving something. So try to see some sense in which you might be in that level in some ways. Illustration. We gave a Lifetime Achievement Award, Lifetime Achievement Award, to a man. Frankly, I do not remember his name. I could look it up, but I haven't looked it up because it sort of makes a better illustration if I don't remember. But I can't remember literally the guy's name. He's not anybody you would ever have heard of unless you happen to have encountered him in a ministry way. He was a pastor in Utah and Idaho. And in 25 years of ministry there, 25 years of his ministry was in that place, he started, I think it was 30 years of ministry in that place, he started 25 Baptist churches in Mormon country, in Utah, Idaho. Never served a church that averaged over 100 in attendance. Planted churches and moved on. He was a building, achieving leader. Never spoke to the SBC, the Evangelism Conference, never wrote a book, never had anything that he said or did brought a claim to him as a person. So you see, it's not about, building an achieving leader is not about other people thinking you're successful. It's not about the size of your church. It is about building what God calls you to build and achieving what God calls you to achieve. Now think of yourself in 2 different places because clearly you're, most of your students and you're achieving something in your student work right now, clearly. That's important. You're also in the beginning assimilating stage in that regard. But I had the opportunity last summer to go back to a church that was the first church I pastored and preached revival in. And I was a pastor for 4 years during the time when I was finishing up my college work. And during that time in my life, if you'd asked me, I would have said, well, hey, what I'm doing is I'm beginning an assimilating. I'm not building or achieving anything because, you know, hey, it's just a little country church. I'm just pastoring this little country church. Well, I went back to that country church and saw those people again and saw the children that were now adults and had children of their own, saw Tommy, who had been a drunk. He was an adult when I was there, but he was a drunk. He came to church once in a while, usually stoned, playing the organ in this little country church and just praising the Lord and living for Jesus and asking me questions about the Bible and talking about ways that our ministry, mine and my wife, had an impact in his life and in his family's life. I realized in looking back at what we did 25 years after the fact that we had made an impact. We had built something there. God had used us to build what he wanted us to build and to achieve what he wanted us to achieve in that time when we were in that. So think of building and achieving, not as a, if you, let me say it one more time, one more way. If you see yourself as a building and achieving leader, there is no pride, there's no pride in that statement at all. It simply means I'm building what God has called and equipped me to build. I'm achieving what God has called and equipped me to achieve. Okay? The fifth stage is maturity. Yes, sometimes the maturing leader might be indicated by a person who's advancing in years or experience or age, but not necessarily. The main characteristic of a maturing leader is that they're mentoring someone else. So if you find that someone's coming alongside you and you're helping them to become the kind of a minister that God would have to be, if you find somebody's coming to you and saying, hey, God, God's calling me in the ministry, and I need you to help me, I need you to walk with me. And for me, I went to seminary a little later than most of you, a little older when I went there than most of you are. This matter of being a maturing leader and being a mentor to others started with me, and it's not funny, but looking back on it. I pastored a country church in Louisiana while I was in New Orleans Seminary. And in rural churches with a lot of senior adults, we do a lot of funerals. And the guys who were my friends and pastors in other churches around the neighborhoods, they ran out of funeral sermons. And I've been a pastor for 10 years, so I had more funeral sermons than they did. So they'd come and we'd talk about funeral sermons. You know, if you get past the first one or two a year, they were in trouble. I had like 8 or 10 a year or so. And we were all doing 20 funerals a year. So I became a maturing leader, even in seminary days. If you're a maturing leader, you're a maturing leader if you're a mentor to someone else. And then finally, refocusing. Refocusing means not that you're leaving the ministry, but that you're refocusing in your leadership. This happens in so many ways. First thing comes to mind, because it's at the end of the board, you know, we're in a leadership pilgrimage. First thing comes to mind is, okay, it's retirement time, so I'm going to shift gears and go somewhere else and minister in some other way. And we have some marvelous things happening in our country in that regard. I know of a man who served as a minister of education for many, many years in Louisiana, coincidentally. And after serving as a minister of education for all those years, got an early retirement when he was in his late 50s, and he went for 6 months out of the year, he goes to a place like Montana or Wyoming, and he helps them start faith ministries. His wife trains the preschool children's workers, and they do build a prospect file. They just do some nuts and bolts stuff that churches in those states could never do if they didn't have somebody like him to come and help them. So he's refocusing his ministry. I was on campus at New Orleans Seminary a few weeks ago, and a young man came to me, a young man, I'm 48, and he was 40, and he said, I'm 40 years old, been a youth minister for about 20 years, I feel called to that, but I feel that now God is calling me into a different kind of ministry. And so he was refocusing and moving from ministry as a youth minister to another kind of ministry within the kingdom of the Lord. So don't limit it just to retirement thinking. Now with that brief overview, where do you see yourself? Who sees yourselves as a beginning assembly? All we do is students, but can somebody tell us about that? How do you see yourself beginning assembly?
Right now I haven't been into a full-time pastorate yet. I'm just in the initial stages of volunteering.
Okay. So you're volunteering and you're in ministry in a church, then, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And serving in that way. That's a very good example of the beginning assembly. He's going to learn a bunch of stuff. He's going to be alongside someone else who can help. And that's very good. All right, what about building and achieving? As we said, that's a little harder. I promise nobody will think you're making a pride statement. Who sees yourself in some ways in building and achieving? Okay, tell us about that.
Well, I'm a pastor in the church since my 14th month there. So a lot of study, a lot of ministry, and whenever I'm not here, I'm out there in the field with a pair of sermons and visiting with families.
So there's a recognition that while you have this part of your leadership pilgrimage going on beginning an assembly,
right,
you also have another piece that's going.
Yeah. I've pastored a church for about 4 years now.
Okay.
Small church, the ones you've been referring to all. And we average about 65, 70. And the first couple of years were kind of rough because a lot of the old timers, you might say, they realized that they really didn't want to hear the whole counsel of God, and they kind of went someplace else. And about half the church now is new, as far as either new Christians or they're new members that have come in from the neighborhood, and they've been outside the church for about 20 or 30 years, and it's a pretty rural area, so.
Good. Okay.
Fine.
Building and achieving?
I guess I would think that I may be at building, though I still feel like I'm learning at the same time and in doing it, but because of apartment ministry, which is somewhat new, and trying to find creative ways to share the gospel and constantly live, but we live there at the apartment complex, so it's like a daily thing working with the folks, but
it is, absolutely it is. And think of yourself in more than one place as you think of the leadership program. Also, what about maturity? Anybody see yourself in that role? I am somewhat. Okay, how so?
Well, actually, I probably have a dual role because it's immaturing. I am a little older myself. And I go to these churches that are, for lack of a better term, birding. I spent 5 months in one church redoing their entire administration. They had no current bylaws or programs or Sunday school programs. Sunday school teacher just sat there and read whatever book was along. And so over about 5 months, they got to have, you know, bylaws, statement of faith, could have choir plays, got to turn donating choir rows, put a music program, a Sunday school program, train Sunday school teachers. And then at the end of 5 months, I moved on to another church and started working with them and started doing that sort of process. So along the pastor there is a young fellow, so I spent a lot of time teaching him how to lead and guide and train. while I'm working in paperwork, you know, they have a budget and that kind of stuff, so. And then, I guess you'd call that building or two, but at the same token, it's mentoring with him because he needs help. He needs people beating up pretty bad.
All right, what about, and may I be anyone, is anyone experiencing refocusing? Hi, come on in, go ahead. Anyone experiencing refocusing?
Part of the ministry.
Well, I am. I'm going into a new ministry, beginning now, but really we're kicking in October. There'll be a new role at LifeWay, so that refocusing, may have been a couple years in LifeWay, that's just what it is. We call it reorganization, it's such a joy. Okay, let's look at this in another way. This morning we talked about those five characteristics of effective leaders. And the first one we said is effective leaders recognize priorities. Now, I want to share something with you that is simple. For me, plans have to be simple in order to work. And it may be, you might even go beyond simple and say it's simplistic, but this works for me. The challenge is, as a minister, as a leader, as a student, this is overwhelming because you guys are so busy with so many activities that you have to be a part of and actions you have to take. But the challenge is, I wake up on Tuesday morning, and my challenge is, what actions am I going to take today? Now, there's certain things, for example, for you, I got to go to class. For me, that's got to be at this meeting, I got to be at this function, I got to do that or the other thing. But then beyond that, there are options, there are choices that we have to make every day. If I'm going to preach on Sunday, how much time am I going to spend in preparing for that message? If I'm going to minister at a church, how much time am I going to spend in administering the church? What about my planning time and administrative time? What about time with my family? All these things are demands on our time, and they are choices. Effective leader is able to recognize priorities. What is my priority? What should I do? What good thing from all the good things that are options for me to do today? Which one am I going to choose? So let me share the simple process that I use. And I don't have one today to show you because my schedule was very simple. I know where I was going to be. Come to Ed's office and go wherever he told me to go, whenever he told me to go there. So I had that figured out. I'm sorry, Dr. Buchanan's office, and do whatever he told me to do. So normally, though, when I'm in my office at home, I make a list. I use probably a 3x5 card or a little sheet of paper. First thing I do is I list all the things that need to be done of that day. And then I go back and I prioritize those things. I like ones, twos, and threes, but some of you right-brain people might want to use A's, B's, and C's. But it's not a big difference. I like ones, twos, and threes. Number one, if I put a number one beside that action, that means it's got to be done today. If I do not do this today, they will simply line up against the wall and execute. So it has to be done today. Twos are things that it would really be good if they could be done today. But if I don't get to it today, tomorrow will be okay. And then threes are things that it'd be really nice. If I get everything else done, it'd be nice to do the threes because that'd really give me a head start. But it's okay, I can do this later this week. Then I do my work. I do the work of the day. And when I'm doing it right, I do the ones first. And then when the ones are finished, I do the twos. Now, this is all around the essentials. I got to go to this meeting. Dr. Mim's office calls or Dr. Miller's office calls. I got to go there. And whenever they call, that's what I got to do. I got to go there. So this is all around those essential things, which would be like your classes or whatever demands that come in that just kind of supersede all those actions that you put in place. But around those things, when I have a moment, I'm going to work on a number one task. And when I get those done, I'm going to work on a number two. But you know what? Sometimes I choose to do things for different reasons than which priority they are in my life. Sometimes I choose to do things because I like to do those things. And sometimes I choose to postpone things because I don't like to do those things. So you know what happens at the end of the day? I share with somebody that I have a child who's a child with special needs. And I mention that simply to say that when I get home, if my wife expects me to be home at 4, and we go in real early, likely, but if my wife expects me to be home at 4, I need to be there. She's counting on me, I really need to be there. Sometimes I call Marcy and I say, Marcy, I cannot come home yet. I've got two things that I have to do before I can go home. They're number one things, they're the kind of things that I cannot put them off. They've got to be done today. Now, what I don't mention is that earlier today, I did some number three things. And if I had made right choices and done the number one things when I should have, I could come home right now because all I have left to do is number three things. So what we do is sometimes we make our choices. Now, don't misunderstand. The things that I've been doing all day are good things. I can look back on the day and I can say I've been working hard. I can look back on the day and I can say I've done important things. But see, that's not the issue. The issue, when we say an effective leader recognizes priorities, is we choosing the best, the most important things, the things that ought to be done, not just because they're important, but they need to be done today. So effective leaders recognize priorities. The second thing we said about effective leaders is that effective leaders understand realities. And I want us to spend a few more moments here. I talked about it a little bit this morning, but understanding realities is so important. I want to talk to you a little bit about the reality of understanding yourself as a leader. First, you need to know yourself. I have a friend, Neil Panera, who is a leader of a ministry called Leader Care. By the way, let me tell you something about Leader Care. Write down this number, or you might just remember it. 888-789-1911. That's a toll-free crisis hotline for Leader Care. This is a ministry to ministers and their families. And we invite ministers, now please don't ask folks in your church who might need counseling or something to call that. We can't handle that load. But this is for ministers and their families. If you know a minister, or if you yourself as a student preparing for ministry, of course, you're very welcome to call. Whether you're presently involved in an active church ministry or not, feel free to call. It's for folks who need someone who understands what ministers are going through. It's a hotline for ministers to call in times of crisis. A lot of times the call will come from someone who's facing burnout. They've just given and given and given till they're empty. And so we invite them to call. We can't solve all their problems, but we promise there'll be someone there who cares and someone who listens and understands what Christian leaders are going through. Sometimes we have people call where their churches are in conflict and a terrible conflict arrives and they don't know how to handle it or what to do with the situation, and so we invite them. And so we would encourage you to know this number, keep it, and to share it with others too. Anyone in ministry is welcome to call. And sometimes we refer, sometimes we can just offer some counseling over the phone. And sometimes we have wounded ministers retreats in which a minister and wife are invited to come to a real in-depth therapy time. We pay all the bills for them to come from wherever in the country. And we do these about six times a year. They're called wounded ministers retreats. And that's accessed through that same number. Now that's for people who really need counseling. Sometimes we have guys call and need wounded ministers retreats who have gotten involved in some kind of unethical or immoral behavior. And that's ruining their ministry or wrecking their family. And they need therapy or they need counseling or they just need help. They just are about to go under. And other times it might be someone who just really burned out. So a lot of different situations. I just want you to be aware of the Leader Care Hotline for ministers and their families. Don't forget the families. Sometimes we've had a junior high girl to call whose father was fired in the business meeting last Wednesday night, and an eighth grade girl's got to go back to school with the kids of whose parents fired her dad a couple of nights before. Tough assignment. So, hey, somebody's there for her to talk to. So let it help us spread the word about the Leader Care Hotline. Now, understanding the realities. You need to understand first who you are as a minister. And the person that you are, you're first of all, you're called God. We're taking a real strong stand for the call. We believe that God calls men and women into ministry. And you might be surprised by this, but sometimes we get challenged on that. Sometimes we encounter foes who don't believe that God really calls people into the ministry. Now, what they want to say is, well, God calls every Christian to minister. And that's true. God calls every Christian to serve. God calls every person to minister. But we believe that there is a special call of God to serve in this ministry. And I believe God calls people to serve not only in a specific ministry, but to serve in a specific place. I don't think our missionaries would go and do what they do, except for a call from God on their lives. And so that's a beginning point. It's a call from God in your life. Who you are as a person. You also are a person with certain gifts. Let's talk for a minute about your spiritual giftedness. I think there's a tendency and a possibility for us to look at spiritual giftedness and use it as an opportunity to exclude people from doing certain things. For example, sometimes I've seen in the church where a church will do a spiritual gifts inventory, and then they will say, okay, now, everybody who's a Sunday school teacher in our church has to have the gift of teaching, otherwise you can't be a Sunday school teacher. I just disagree with that so much, because God calls people into ministry, and God calls people to serve in a lot of different ways. And I know some wonderful Sunday school teachers who do not have the gift of teaching, but they have the gift of helps or the gift of ministry. That's a great thing. God can use them in a great way. Now, of course, a person who has the gift of teaching needs to be used in teaching. But God can use other kind of gifts in teaching ministries as well. I also know some pastors who are great pastors, who probably don't have as strong a gift of leadership or a strong gift of prophecy as some pastors that I know have. And you know what? That's okay. You are a person who is called of God, who's built by the Lord and equipped by the Lord and gifted by the Lord. And I can call him my pastor, who just recently changed churches, not because of him, he retired, but my pastor, a man that I love very much, does not have gifts of leadership or gifts of administration that are so valuable in the pastor. But he has wonderful gifts relating to people, gifts of ministry, gifts of caring. And he's a wonderful pastor, great pastor. One year recently, his church baptized 88 people, and he won almost all of them to the Lord himself. And he doesn't have great gifts of administration, or else he'd have the people out there doing that winning, but he has great gifts. He probably has the gift of evangelism, too. So I just wanted to say, ministers, Christian leaders, have all kinds of different gifts, and that's okay. Let's talk about burnout a little bit, though. This is something I want to be sure we talk about during the time when we talk about you as a person. One of the things that I see happening in the lives of ministers, all kinds of ministers, not just preachers, is burnout. A definition of burnout would be you have emptied yourself physically and spiritually and emotionally, and I guess in some ways even mentally. But as a minister, you give until you have nothing left to give. You pour yourself out to your end. So that's kind of the definition of burnout. Let's talk a little bit about that. Look on the what I would call the back of this, I guess, the one that says burn out or burn on at the top of the page. Look at that one. It's got two lists of 10, two sets of 10 there. Get around most of the room. Because I think I see signs of burnout in a lot of seminary students. And I know you've earned it. I know you deserve it. You know, if anybody deserves to be burned out, you do. But still, it can be dangerous for you. So let's talk a little bit about that. Number one, danger signal of burnout is your devotional life is suffering. Now, your devotional, understand the way to look at these 10 danger signals. Your devotional life can suffer without you being burned out. We're not saying that if any one of these things occurs in your life, you're burned out. All we're saying is these are danger signals. These are wake-up calls. Take a look, okay? Your devotional life is suffering. You're a person who spent some time in the Word, all of a sudden, you look up one day and you're not doing that anymore. It's a danger signal. Number two, your family life is being adversely affected. Now, there's no way to get any kind of a degree from seminary without your family life being adversely affected. It is a rule. It is a law somewhere written down. We're talking about the extreme situations here, and we're talking about an ongoing situation. And seminary students suffer from burnout. Family life is adversely affected. Number three, there's a nagging sense of always being behind. No matter what I do, I'm never caught up. This, go ahead, guys, so when you need to move around, I know some folks have some other responsibilities. This is a real trap in ministry for Christian leaders, this sense of never finishing anything. There have been times in my ministry, my time as a pastor, when I have looked at a guy digging a ditch or digging a hole, and I've thought, if that was my job, I'd get to the end of the day, and I would say, you know what, there was no hole there, and now there's a hole there. At least I could look, that is one thing that I finished. Now, preaching is one of you have just seen me for one day, and you know that you can tell probably that I like to preach. That's fun. It is a wonderful experience, but it is never, absolutely never finished. Ministering to people is a fulfilling thing. I don't care how good you are or how hard you work, there will always be somebody else that needs you. This is a real trap. I think it's healthy for ministers to find something to do. Usually for me, that means something with my hands that I can finish. That I can say, here's something I started, and I did it. I finished it. It is complete. I can put this away. That's a healthy thing, and sometimes we need that. Sometimes we need just to be intentional, to look at our lives and say, man, I'm always wrapping up all these loose ends. I'm going to find something that I can finish. I'm going to finish it just for the purpose of it. Tell the truth, that's why I got my doctorate, so I finished it. Number four, you find yourself with a low threshold for inconvenience. Little things that ought not to amount to anything suddenly do. Low threshold of inconvenience, I think that relates to You know, there are two kind of ways of dealing with anger. Some people are exploders, and others are kind of the low burn kind of folks. Well, low burn guys, if you're a low burn kind of a person, you just kind of keep everything on boil for a long time, and then the explosion comes, it's really big. That's kind of what this is about, the low threshold of inconvenience. Things that you know good and well shouldn't bother you at all, shouldn't be any big deal. And all of a sudden, little inconveniences matter, something's wrong. Something's out of balance, that's not healthy. And we know that, but we don't want to say it. Number five, Sabbath rest is the exception rather than the norm. Sunday, I get up, a typical Sunday, I get up like maybe at 6. We get up pretty early at our house anyway, but get up maybe at 6, help my son get ready, and he and I go somewhere and I preach. My son usually goes with me when I preach on Sunday morning. And then if you're a pastor, then that, boy, it's a lot easier now than it was when I was a pastor. There's other afternoon stuff. Then you preach again on Sunday night. And, boy, at the end of the day, maybe you preach two or three, sometimes even four times on Sunday morning, and preach once on Sunday night. At the end of the day, you can look back on the day, you can say, wow, that was fulfilling. You can say, wow, that was exciting. But you probably cannot say, wow, that was restful. Now, not all of your pastors, but you have a similar thing. I've seen the staff folks at our church come, and, buddy, they work from 8, at least in the morning, through till about 1 o'clock, and then again in the evening. We have half as many people on Sunday night as we do on Sunday morning, and all these different activities. Wonderful thing, but it is work. When are those guys going to have a Sabbath rest? When are they going to apply the Sabbath rest principle to their own lives? If you look at your life and you see that there is no place in which I'm applying the Sabbath rest principle to my life, you're in danger. There's a risk. Now, as seminary students, I don't have any answers for it. You know, there will come a time when you'll have more control over your own schedule if you assert it. If you don't assert it, there'll never come a time when you have more control over your own life. But if you assert it, there'll come a time when you have more control over your own life or schedule. But a Sabbath rest principle must be applied for heaven. And if it's not there, that's a danger signal. Number six, there's a sense of overall weariness. You wake up tired. Number seven, physical exercise is sporadic or non-existent. I want to say a personal word to you about physical exercise. I know I'm still a fat preacher, and I know I have a long ways to go. But 2 years ago, I started an exercise routine that has literally changed my life. For the last 2 years, I do 60 minutes, and that's not stretching all that. 60 minutes of real aerobic stuff. At least 3 times a week. For 2 years, I haven't missed 3 times a week. Now, the reason I tell you that, this is not a brag moment. I want to give you some very literal examples of how this is changing you, because I hope that it would motivate you to establish exercise routines. There was a time in my life when I thought about being 60 or 65 or 70 years old, my thoughts always went to life insurance. Now, it's not like a joke, but I'm telling you the truth. My dad died at 58 with a heart attack. My grandfather died with a heart attack. There was no way that I expected to live to retirement. I always thought life insurance. I feel so much better and so much more confident. Aches and pains, what I can eat and not eat, everything is better. I can think more clearly, but the biggest difference is in my outlook toward the end of my life. I think I might live, and that is huge. So I just want to tell you, I started this when I was 46, and I just want to tell you that exercise and having a healthy lifestyle, and I know I've got a long ways to go, but just starting on the coverage has been wonderful. I've lost 25 pounds and would like to lose 25 more in the next, I don't want to go fast, I want to go slowly. That's too confessional, but anyway, it is a huge, the difference is absolutely undescribable. I feel so much better. So please do that. Please make that a lifestyle. Number seven, physical exercise. Number eight, physical ailments are increasing. There can be times of sickness in your life that don't necessarily indicate burnout, but you can see the connection. We're talking about 10 danger signals, and you kind of put these things together. Being physically and emotionally and spiritually empty, that condition we call burnout will manifest itself in your life in some other ways. Things will start going wrong physically. Number nine, the sense of serving God with gladness is gone. When you've lost your joy, I wonder sometimes if I go too far in this, but I think about John 10:10, where Jesus said, I'm come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. Now, I don't know how big a step it is from what Jesus actually said to saying, serving the Lord ought to be fun. Now, I know every minute of every day is not fun. I know that it wasn't fun for Stephen to be stoned. I know it wasn't fun for Paul to stand against the Judaizers and those who would attack his reputation and attack his person. I think if you can't go home at the end of the day with a sense of joy in what you're doing, something's wrong. There ought to be a sense of joy in serving the Lord. If it's not there, if the sense of serving God with gladness is gone, that's interesting. Number 10, you fight periodic thoughts of fleeing from the will of God. You know, I could make a living in a lot of ways. I don't have to put up with this. I could go drive a truck. I could go work at Lifeway. That's getting out of the ministry. No, that's not the ministry. That's still the ministry. Fight those periodic thoughts of fleeing from the will of God. If you find that cropping up, that's a sign of burnout. So, take a look at that. Kind of give yourself an inventory. Now, here's some insights. Wait on God. When you're in a time, especially when you're a student, when you're in a time of burnout, hold on. Sometimes you just have to get a grip and hold on till that paper is done or that term is finished or till that period of time in the church passes. Number two, see the home as a launching pad for all your public ministry. It's a solid place, a place you can depend on. See that. Number three, recognize the need for supportive relationships. Let me talk to you about that one for a second. Every Christian leader needs somebody that they can go to for accountability and for friendship. For me, I always had friends in the church, but it's not the same. Now, don't misunderstand me. They're lifetime friendships, strong. I love those people. They're friends today that I pastored over the years. But when I was there serving as their pastor, there were some things I couldn't talk to. I'm not saying you shouldn't have those friendships. I'm saying, in addition to them, you need some other friends. You need some relationships. Now, I hear some reports of people your age doing this through internet relationships. You know, having a preacher buddy or someone like in ministry, like ministry, that's serving and you can communicate through email. I don't know. If that works for you, that's fine. But a relationship, somebody you can talk with. I also hear reports, by the way, around the country of guys. I'm sorry, I've talked so much to pastors. I'm hearing reports of ministers who find another minister in the community who's of another denomination, but they have some things in common and they can talk. And one minister can say, well, yeah, you know, we do that a little differently, but I understand what you're going through. Somebody that can hold you accountable and that you can share with very openly that can be a friend. Also, seminary friendships, I think, that last through the years are good there. Number three, recognize the need for supportive, I'm sorry, I said that. Number four, recognize that character must precede charisma. What we're talking about here is who you are as a person, your integrity, your ethics. Who you are as a leader is more important than the image that you project. And if it's not there, you'll burn out if you don't have an essence of who you are that's real. Number five, commit yourself to build for permanence. This is about how you spend your time. You see, when you're burning yourself out, you're pouring yourself out, usually what you're doing is you're putting out fire. John. And what happens is you get tired and frustrated and discouraged. And the time comes then, you know what, I need to make some choices what I'm doing with my time. I need to make some choices about how I'm going to invest myself. I'm going to pour myself out today, but I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to build something that will last. Build with gold, silver, precious stones, not wood, hay, and stone. Number seven, learn to plan, to delegate, and to manage your time. Tomorrow, we're going to spend most of our time, I hope many of you can come back, but if you can't, tomorrow we're going to spend most of our time talking about that planning process. If you cannot be here, it's called how to strategically plan the work of your church. And the heart of the process is in this handout. But the principle is learning to plan and learning to delegate will save you. And see, in the beginning, I don't have time to plan. I gotta go do this and win this person, do that. That's true, but it's an investment. You're building for the future, you're planning so that more can be done in the long run. You know that. and delegating. So hard for some of us to do, but it's essential. Number seven, plan time off. Do it carefully, do it creatively. Sometimes I'll call my wife and I'll say, meet me at the Y. Let's the whole family go to the Y. They've got a pool there, so the kids will swim, we exercise. But also, sometimes you have to leave town. I don't have to leave town anymore to take time off, but if you're a pastor or a staff member, sometimes you have to leave town. Leave town cheap, but you have to leave town. It's okay to say no. Number nine, make exercise and proper nutrition. Have a cookie, but exercise. Number 10, stay in your spirit and resist the snare of comparison. You know, earlier I shared with you about the Rick Warren story. I really was trapped in that comparison thing for a while in my young years in ministry. You know, if I can't be like so-and-so, you fill in who one of your heroes is. If I can't be like so-and-so, then I'm not any good. That's a trap. Don't go with it. Okay, take a look at the other side. Recovering from burnout. These are pretty self-explanatory, so let me just hit a couple of high spots. Number one, confess to God that you cannot do this. Don't beat yourself up about it. You don't have enough strength. You don't have enough smarts. You can't do it. That's okay. Look at number four. Find a trusted support group or compassionate counselor who knows how to listen. Now, be careful. Look at number five. Don't share with people who are going to hurt you. They're out there. There's some people who will listen to you and they'll use it to hurt you. Number six, feed your weakened spirit. Tell me, how do you feed? How do you refresh yourself when you're burned out? How do you replenish your spiritual strength?
Motivational books.
Oh, okay, good. Anyone come to mind? I don't.
Chicken soup for the soul.
Yeah. All right. Good.
Retreats.
Good.
I just like to listen to good talk on the radio.
Yeah.
I don't get to hear them very much when I'm preaching.
Yeah.
So here's the book.
Now, you know that cartoon where Charlie Brown and the other guy are looking at the clouds and the smart one says all the things he sees in the clouds, and Charlie Brown's going to say, well, I was going to say a bunny and a ducky, but never mind. That's kind of the way I feel about mine. What you're saying is absolutely valid, and I appreciate all those responses. But sometimes for me, getting on that exercise machine that has elliptical movement for your feet and has handles there, you know, and watch, I'm a news hound. I love politics, I love the news, and I never have time to watch the news unless I'm on an aerobic machine. That feeds me. Now, I know it doesn't feed me spiritually, I tricked you a little bit, but it replenishes me, it nourishes me, and gives me a sense of accomplishment that I'm doing something right. Feed your weakened spirit. Okay, number 10, stop violating the Sabbath rest principle. Let's do one other thing about leadership. We've said that effective leaders recognize priorities. We've said that effective leaders understand realities. We said that effective leaders make decisions. And we said that effective leaders develop plans. Plans. And there's where we're going to camp tomorrow. And let me share one other thing with you today, though, in the few minutes that we have left. Let's talk about some leadership styles. Oh, here it is. I'm just looking at the back. I know that you guys have read a lot of stuff about leadership styles. I want to talk to you about that just for a minute, because I see so many traps.